TheOldOrchard.com. How you doing, Pierre?
Well, Simon, how are you?
Very well. So I heard you talking to Rod that you are in New York City, Capitals versus the Rangers tonight at MSG. Pierre, can I ask you a question? You ever, because one of the things I never got to take in, and I hate this, because one of the things I want to do, bucket list, I want to attend the Masters. I want to take in the Masters, and I want to take in the Wimbledon Championships. Growing up as a fan of tennis, I always wanted to do that. But one thing I never got to do, and I'm wondering if you ever got to do it, did you ever get to watch a Big East basketball game at Madison Square Garden, like Syracuse versus Georgetown, like back in the day?
Not at MSG. I have seen Big East basketball, but just not at MSG. You know, when you're coaching in the NHL, a lot of times you're in buildings where, now it was a different time, obviously, it's 20, 25 years ago, but there were a lot of basketball situations, whether we were in Boston or whether we were in Philadelphia, even when we were in Pittsburgh, because Pitt was in the Big, or still is in the Big East. I never had a chance at MSG, but I've seen them in other places. Yeah, yep.
I like to do that. Okay, so Pierre, Habs in Carolina tonight, kicking off the second part of their 7-game road trip. They play again tomorrow versus Tampa Bay, and on Saturday versus the Florida Panthers. Pierre, you know, we had this conversation off the top. Habs are well rested. They need the points. What do you think the probability of seeing Carey Price start in all three of these games?
Depends on the workload. Tonight, I think, you know, these are tough ones. The first game back after the Christmas break for everybody, it's tough because you never know what you're going to get. You don't know whether guys are fatigued. You don't know whether guys got some illnesses from their children, bringing them home from school, believe it or not. These ones are a little bit tougher to gauge, the first game back after the break. You'll have a better idea. But I would imagine if he's facing 36 to 42 shots somewhere in that area and the scoring chances are, you know, heavy against him, I would say two of the three games. If it's, you know, more pedestrian and it's 25 to 30 shots and the scoring chances are slated heavily towards Montreal, maybe three out of three. But, you know, I know people don't want to hear it. They had to run the table in Alberta. I really believe they had to run the table in Alberta, and they weren't able to do it in the last game, and that was a problem. It's a problem for them going forward, too, because Boston's not going away, and Carolina knows they got a chance to put a dagger in them tonight.
Yeah, and you're talking about bringing something home from the kids, whether it be at school or a daycare or whatever. Word coming out of Carolina right now, the Habs have been hit with the flu bug. Schlemko out, didn't even make the trip, and now there's a trickle effect here that there's several Canadiens players that have been hit with the flu bug.
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. You can't. These are the hardest ones to predict. I'm sitting here at MSG right now. This afternoon, the Harlem Globetrotters played a basketball game here, and so neither team was here to practice. So you don't know. You really won't know up until game time. And both teams are starting their backups, by the way. I was just talking to Mike Milbury about it. You know, Holtby's not playing tonight for Washington because they play the Bruins tomorrow at home. So Grubauer's playing, and this is probably breaking news. And Lundqvist isn't playing for the Rangers in a game that I think the Rangers really need to win. And they're going with Andre Pavlik. So it just shows you these first games back are really, really difficult.
Pierre, Simon and I were disagreeing a little bit earlier about, you know, when you have a case of a back-to-back situation and you're trying to decide which goaltender to start, do you start your starting guy, your Carey Price, against the team you think you have a better chance of winning against, or do you just put them up against the harder team? Do you take the points where you can get them, or does that send the wrong message?
Well, I don't think you're about trying to send a message. It's a great question, by the way. I was always of the belief, and the way I was taught, is you're always trying to win your home games no matter what. And in the Canadiens' case, obviously they're not on home ice, so you probably want to load up with your best player to go and then see where the chances are for and against and the shots are for and against, and then you get a better idea. But I have to think Carey knows as well as anybody. Carey knows where they are in the standings, and Carey knows that they are getting close to running out of time here. And they need him to be the best he can be. So I would imagine, you know, he'll try to play as many games as he can the rest of the way.
Pierre, Weber out. He didn't even make the trip. And now Schlemko definitely out for tonight and highly likely for tomorrow. When you're missing two of your six on the back end, you can bring up whoever you like. But how much does what is your concern now as a head coach? Is it not having your defenders to defend or not having your defenders to help push the play, to get out of your zone, to start the transition game?
Well, I think you need to defend. That's why I'm talking about what I'm talking about with chances for and chances against. Goalies can be resilient and last a long time if they're not seeing a lot of those high-end chances. And when you have Weber in a matchup role, you know, Schlemko's not really the defensive force you're thinking, but he's still a serviceable NHL player. He's more of an offensive-type player than a defensive-type player. But you're definitely thinking more about defense. And again, Victor Matej at the World Junior. So, you know, and then I don't need to go over the laundry list of players that aren't there for the Canadiens anymore because they've moved on to different teams from their back end. So that's definitely not a position of strength for the Canadiens. There's no question about that.
So living in the here and now in the day-to-day, as most coaches choose to live, do you at all risk bringing in messaging when it comes to the standings and when it comes to how grave the situation is for the Canadiens 6 points out? Do you risk bringing that in, or you just stick to the opponent tonight and deal with the 2 points in front of you tonight?
Tonight I would worry about Carolina and wanting to say to my team, let's knock them out. I'll never forget, we were playing the Islanders in Pittsburgh, and they were kind of nipping at our heels a little bit back in 92. And I remember Scotty, he wasn't one to give big, long-winded speeches, but he said, fellas, you got a chance to bury these guys, knock them right out of the tournament tonight. So let's do that. That was his only message. You know, the guys respond to something like that, Rod. They really do. But I think if you start looking too far down the schedule, then it becomes really burdensome and really difficult in terms of being a mental exercise you probably won't be able to overcome.
Pierre, you know, going into this season and, you know, just sitting here on TSN 690 and trying to forecast the Canadiens' year, you know, I thought it would be goals by committee, elite goaltending, and a very efficient power play. And goals by committee, elite goaltending, not at the beginning of this year, that's for certain. But I want to talk about the power play. Pierre, when you're breaking down film and you want to execute on game day, how much is it you keep playing to your strengths, or is it you sitting and watching what the penalty killing for the Carolina Hurricanes does and what you want to do on that day, and then flip it again for Thursday against Tampa Bay, and then flip it again for Saturday against the Florida Panthers? Like, how much do you just you do your thing, or is it that you adjust on a nightly basis?
Well, you have to adjust a little bit, because I'll give you an example. Whenever Daryl Sutter was coaching in the league, whether it was in Chicago or San Jose, Calgary, L.A., his big thing was pressure points once the puck crossed the blue line. So you had to be ready for that, and your players needed to adjust. Some other teams, when Herb Brooks coached in New Jersey, I coached against them, and Herb's team would be very passive. They would give you the outside shot, but they never give you anything from the inside, so you had to work to get more screens. Every coach was different. Dave King in Calgary, again, I'm going back to when I coached, he had a different type of penalty kill with up-ice pressure. Especially you had such a great guy in Joel Otto that could do that kind of stuff, and Ronnie Stern. So Joey Neuendijk, every team's a little bit different when you look at it, but you can always find one flaw in somebody's penalty kill, and if you can find that flaw and expose it in a game, and if it can lead to one goal, that helps a lot. So that's the key, is to finding where that one flaw is and then just implementing a piece of sequence on your power play that would be able to expose that flaw.
Pierre, I get the impression today from being online and from watching TV that Johnny Bauer was really like the Jean Beliveau of the Leafs world. And I got to really get my Leafs education from his grandson when I worked with him for a few years. You know, what can you say about him that maybe Habs fans don't know? That, you know, if he's the Jean Beliveau of the Leafs, I feel like we should know more about this guy.
I think that's absolutely fair to say and very true. Johnny Bauer, one of the most selfless people that ever played in the National Hockey League. Unlike Jean Beliveau, where the Montreal Canadiens had to buy a league, the Quebec Senior League, to get his rights, Johnny Bauer played for almost 14 years in the American Hockey League. There was nobody even looking to get his rights when the Toronto Maple Leafs got him. Probably the best story I can tell you, and I've told this story a lot, my brother Regan and I went to a hockey camp that I loved, Halliburton Hockey Haven, when we were really young guys. And one of the coaches at the time was Johnny Bauer. And I forget whether my brother and I just spent all our money early in camp or whatever, but we didn't have enough money to go to the movies where all the other campers were going, or most of the other campers. So we were sitting in front of the movie theater in Halliburton, Ontario, and Johnny Bauer comes up and says, "What are you guys doing?" We're like, "Well, we can't go in the movie." He goes, "Why not?" We said, "Well, we don't have enough money." And Johnny Bauer paid for us to go into the movie. And I told him that story when I got to know him really well when I lived in Toronto back in the early 2000s. And he's like, nah, I never did that. I'm like, yes, you did. You know, he was just a selfless, selfless man. He was an amazing human spirit, and somebody that very much, in terms of how he dealt with people, very similar to Mr. Béliveau. Very, very similar.
Simon Slickus in for Mitch Melnyk. This is Melnyk in the Afternoon on TSN 690 with Rod Francis and Robin Flynn. And conversation with NBC hockey analyst Pierre McGuire. Pierre, a couple of news and notes from the National Hockey League. I thought this might be a down year for the St. Louis Blues, but that's clearly not the case. You check out the junior tournament. They're also pretty stacked when it comes to their prospects. And the Blues extend their general manager, Doug Armstrong, 4 years.
Well, they've done some great things there. Marty Berger has done some outstanding things as an assistant general manager. Al McInnes has done some unbelievable things as a director of player personnel and somebody that's really been close to the right hand of Doug Armstrong for a long time. Robbie DeMille's as good a pro scout as there is in the National Hockey League. So I'm just, Doug gets the reward, and those scouts will eventually get the reward as well because he's been extended. But it takes a lot to build an organization, and that's where Doug's been really good. He's hired some really significantly good people. He's not afraid to delegate authority to them. He really did a good job, I thought, in terms of empowering his amateur scouts to go out and make some significant acquisitions. I think he's done a tremendous, tremendous job. And, he's just a hockey lifer. That's what Doug Armstrong is. He's a hockey lifer. He learned the job really well from Bob Gainey, I think, over time, and also from Bob Clark. And you move forward, and he's done a real good job moving forward in his career.
Pierre, Team Canada winners yesterday versus what I've been told, because I have not broken down any film on any Finnish young player. But what I've read and what I've heard, that is, this is a very, very good Finnish roster. And I just want to get your thoughts. How is that good to start off the tournament on that much of a high? Can it be detrimental at standpoint? And then maybe there's a letdown later on? Or do you like just going top dog versus top dog right out of the gate?
Simon, I didn't think they were very good yesterday. I thought they were just okay. And that, believe me, their coaches will be resonating that message as well. The number one thing in this tournament is to get better every day. And their performance yesterday allows for a lot of room for them to improve. They were sloppy. They were undisciplined. 6 penalties. They gave up opportunities they never should have given up because of faulty end zone coverage. I would imagine they're going to be a whole lot better. This Canadian team is good. It's not great. It reminds me a lot of the 06 team that won in Vancouver. They're going to have to do a lot by committee and have elite goaltending, and that's where Carter Hart's going to have to be really good. But I would say that the positive thing is you can see they have the ability to play with anybody in the tournament, but they can't be reckless, especially when it comes to playing the better teams. I thought they were reckless and undisciplined yesterday.
Yeah, and that game is tonight again in Buffalo. And Pierre, I'm wondering, given they don't really have the superstar one line that's going to carry the team, does that make them generally a little bit easier to stay on the same page when you know you could have a different hero any single night?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. That's a big part of why the 06 team won. It was team defense and a young Jonathan Toews stepping up or a Steve Downey stepping up at the right time. It was a late Luc Bourdon doing some fantastic things defensively. Mark Stahl, Ryan Parent, guys that really stepped up and delivered for a Canadian team that most people thought had no chance of winning gold that year. That was should have been a Russian year or an American year. The Americans were stacked up, and the Russians were really stacked up, and they weren't able to beat the Canadians. And I think part of it was because of the crowd. Part of it is because of what Rod just talked about. The guys really knew they had to stick to a game plan. And part of it, I think, more than anything else, you had a different hero every night, and that was great.
Pierre, you're a little bit surprised. I asked Michael Farber this question. I'll ask you this question. You're a little bit surprised at the turnout for the American squad's game?
Oh, my gosh. I can tell you. I was sitting at a good friend's house, a guy that won the Hobie Baker, played in 2 Olympics, has been a huge part of USA Hockey, Scott Fusco. He and his brother, the only 2 brothers that have ever won the Hobie Baker, both of them played at Harvard. I was sitting at his house in Boston last night watching that game, and we were both incredulous, Simon. We could not believe how few people were at the American-Denmark game. We were absolutely shocked. Now, I know it's close to Canada. I know a lot of people from Fort Erie come over, and I know a lot of people from Hamilton and Toronto come down and cheer for Canada. But that was really different to see that many empty seats for a USA game.
Pierre, how come Minnesota doesn't get a stab at the World Juniors when it comes to an American city, an American host?
I think they do. Everybody gets a stab. It depends on what your presentation is in terms of the finances. This is a huge money event now, and I feel guilty because I was part of helping make it a big money event. The Halifax World Junior in 2002 was the first time that they ever broke 2 million viewers for a World Junior, and that propelled the tournament in the Canadian marketplaces to a level that most cities, not all, but most cities could never get to. And that's why, you know, in 2010, people forget this, in 2010, the World Junior was in Regina in Saskatoon. It was supposed to be in Switzerland. They couldn't get the money in Switzerland to get to the gate receipts that the IIHF and Hockey Canada wanted. So that's part of the problem is some of these cities, that, you know, we'll take the tournament, but we're not going to give you the money that you're asking for. So that's one of the things that people pay attention to.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised. And I Michael Farber mentioned maybe a price point might be an issue. I think it may be. It was a price
on
point
tickets,
issue.
On tickets, he's absolutely right. Yeah. Michael Farber's 100% right on that. But again, listen, in Montreal, everybody knows that's listening to this, there were a lot of empty seats in Montreal, too, in the preliminary part of the term, because the price points are too high for those preliminary games. It's when they get into the medal round where people start to come and start to fill it up.
Great stuff, Pierre. Enjoy the game tonight, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
I'll be in Washington tomorrow. Washington and the Bruins tomorrow. Big game. Enjoy your Canadiens game tonight, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Thank you, Pierre. Pierre McGuire, NBC hockey analyst. Robin, would you ever wanted to take in a big East basketball game?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm like a fan of sport, period.
Yeah. There's a great documentary. Not documentary. It's a great 30 for 30.
That's a documentary.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. On Big East. Mm. Big East basketball is so good. Growing up in the 80s, it was such a big deal here in the city. It was kind of like you were either a Laker, a Celtic fan, a Cowboy or Steeler, and a Syracuse and a Hoya fan. So good stuff. Good stuff. Never got to take it in. Why? Lazy. That's why. That's the excuse right there. Simon's Legos, Robin Flynn and Rod Francis. This is Melk in the Afternoon on TSN 690. Robin will hit you with an update right around 5:30. And after that, former NHLer, three-time Stanley Cup champ, Aaron Ward.
Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. ShipEnergy.com.